This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn with me, Dashran Johan. Assam Baki is a name you've probably heard quite a bit over the past month or so. The Malaysian Anti-Corruption Commission chief, he's the MACC chief commissioner, has been embroiled in potential corruption involving shares that he's owned / trading accounts under his name that was apparently used by his brother. Now, concerning the latter, the Securities Commission recently did say they were going to do an investigation. They did an investigation. And yesterday they claimed that they have no reason or they couldn't be established that there was a breach of regulation with relation to the trading account. So there's a lot to unpack here. There's a lot of things going on. Things seem a little bit messy and murky. So joining me on the show today to help me unpack all of this is Iskandar Faris. He's the communications director at REFSA. Welcome to the show, Iskandar.
Thank you. Thank you, Dashran, for having me here again.
All right. Iskandar, this has been talked about quite a bit, but you know, we want to keep the conversation going for those who may not be familiar with the entire saga. Could you summarize what it's all about?
Let me just frame the whole scenario, the entire saga, in a few short explanation. I think the issue is quite technical for some. So I'll just give the milestones or the big turning points of the saga itself.
Right.
So it is quite a technical issue. It has to do with share trading. But the way, I think the ultimate question is the way it has been handled when it was exposed. That raises more questions than answers. In October 2021, a whistleblower revealed how Assam Baki owned stocks and in public listed companies, well above the 100,000 ringgit threshold set for civil servants. At the same time, activist Lalita Kunaratnam also reports on this controversy. What follows is MPs and various other agencies and NGOs called for the probe on Assam Baki's shareholding. In 27 December, Professor Edmund Tellis Gomez then announced that he was resigning from the MACC Consultation and Corruption Prevention Panel, alleging that because of the inaction over the allegations surrounding Assam. So then we see how Assam Baki responded. He claimed that the trades had been executed by his brother using his account, his share trading account. Mm. So this response actually prompted the Securities Commission to look into the allegation, because you can't trade using other people's account. That's a law against this.
Right.
So then that launched into another investigation. Meanwhile, Assam also was called to the Special Select Committee, the PSC, on agencies under Prime Minister's Department to investigate this matter. Notably, he snubbed this request, saying because of legal matters, he need to prioritize other investigation. So that is also questionable. Another more recent development was that the Securities Commission said that they have concluded the investigation but cannot find any proof that any law was violated.
Right.
So this whole saga raises more questions than, you know, answers.
Now, you mentioned numbers here. You're talking about a minimum. You cannot trade more, own shares more than 100,000 ringgit. You cannot use your brother's trading account and things like that. Now, perhaps you can explain in layman's terms. So why is all any of this wrong? What exactly is Assam Baki allegedly doing wrong here? Why is it a big deal?
Well, just to keep it in layman's term, for trading, there shouldn't be any formal way or acknowledgement that you can trade using other people's account or proxy
right.
trading. This, if the SC FC's investigation had concluded and says that, okay, Assam Baki might have used his brother's account and we don't find anything wrong with this, then that set a very dangerous precedent on anyone who wants to use this kind of method to maybe do insider trading, because insider trading is a very it's prohibited, and if you set a kind of precedence like this, then any future activities such as this can be allowed, or people can argue themselves out of this kind of conundrum. So it is very technical in the sense that maybe the everyday people think that, oh, it's okay, just use another person's account. But it's notably to say even Shopee don't allow people to use other people's account formally to buy stuff on their platform.
Now, you know, with all of this in mind, there have been calls for Azam Baki to resign. But at the same time, there are also, you know, a couple of people, a number of experts actually, who are saying, like, some of them want Azam Baki to resign. The other half is saying that, you know, perhaps he doesn't need to resign yet, because but what needs to happen is investigations and things like that, so that, you know, everything can be put on the table in a transparent measure. And then following that, we can, you know, take measures to see whether he should resign or not. Which side of the camp do you fall under? Do you think Azam Baki should resign?
So I think regardless whether he should resign or not, him being there gives the impression that the investigation is not fair and transparent. This harks back to the days of the one MDB, where there were perceivably no check and balances, where a person can be seen as intervening in the various levels or phases of investigation. Mm-hmm. We've seen this in testimonies of the case itself, the SRC and one MDB case, in court's testimony by witnesses saying that the principal suspect, such as Najib, Jolo, and the rest, were trying to conceal evidence, trying to disrupt investigation at every stage of the process. So having Azam Baki at the driver's seat, per se, obviously disrupts any attempt or any effort by various parties to dig into this issue further, to find what's really happening behind the scenes of this saga. So I think our institution, since the days, at least from 1MDB onwards, have suffered immense crisis of confidence and a crisis of integrity. Having him there, regardless whether whether we want him to resign or at least be put on holiday, per se. Not to be able to exercise any control or pull any strings, perceivably, to affect this investigation is important. So I think justice needs to be done, but needs to be perceived to be done as well.
Now, you brought up the Securities Commission report, or basically what their statement just now, and you know, and they have said that they're not able to establish that there is a breach of regulation with relation to the trading account of Azam Baki. What are your thoughts on this statement of theirs? Because you said it could set an you know, dangerous precedent. Should they have released a more detailed report, perhaps? Because, like, I guess the question now is, if he himself said that, you know, his brother was using his account, and then the Securities Commission now come out and said that they are not able to establish that there was a breach of regulation. What does any of this mean? It seems like two contradictory statements. It feels like Azam Baki himself has admitted to doing something that is supposedly illegal, where his brother uses his trading account, but then investigations seem to not find that. How are you processing all of this?
It's really hard to process, I guess, from someone who's observing. It's really hard to make sense out of everything like this, because as I mentioned at the start, this whole turn of events actually raises more questions than answers. So if SC said that they can't find anything wrong or cannot really conclusively determine that anything was wrong in the first place. So then we had to ask the question, did Azam's brother really use the account?
Right.
If Azam's brother didn't use his, the account, and he was definitely the one using the account, then did he lie about it? So this simple question wasn't answered through the statement. And I guess, most importantly, SC must be transparent in how they arrived to this kind of conclusion. I think what we see from SC's statement, it was just that, a statement. And there were a screenshot of email flying around reiterating that statement, which does nothing to clear the air of the whole issue. Definitely it would help if the Securities Commission can explain further to the public on what processes and what methods did they use to ascertain or verify the allegations, or even Azam's admission that the account was used by his brother. So all of this needs to be put on the table and presented to the public transparently, and make sure that no stone is left unturned. So I guess this institution owes the public explanation, and we can't afford to have more institution being compromised by any individuals or any person with interest that can affect the integrity of our institutions. From this saga alone, we've suffered damage in terms of integrity or confidence in the terms of the MACC. And now the SC also is under assault in terms of integrity because of the intransparent manner in the way that they go about in doing this investigation. So we need to put a pin on this abuse of procedures, but come clean to the public, explain to the public that there has been too much damage suffered by Malaysia's institution, and we can't afford to suffer anymore.
On the show with me today is Iskandar Faris. He's the communications director at REFSA. After the break, I'll be asking him for short-term and long-term solutions to this problem. We'll be back with more on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is Iskandar Faris, comms director at the think tank REFSA, and he's helping me unpack the whole Azam Baki saga. So, Iskandar, to counter the reports and the whistleblowing that have come out against Azam Baki, Azam Baki has now filed a defamation suit seeking 10 million ringgit in damages against the journalist that you brought up earlier, Lalita Kunaratnam. What does this defamation suit tell you?
Well, on Azam Baki's end, it's understandable that he would want to protect his good name. Mm-hmm. But as I mentioned earlier, this whole saga seems a bit, the perception from the public is on the way the saga is being handled is a bit dodgy per se, because once Azam explained the whole his side of the story, and also the reaction of other institutions to this story. So if we recall, his commissioners actually came up with a statement to defend Azam. And then there's also this turnaround by this U-turn by SC to clear his name after there was a series of investigation on the SC. So this whole saga reeks of that there are something behind the scenes that is happening that we are not privy to. Mm. Of course, he would like to clear his name through defamation charge. Suits and all, he would want to say that he's innocent. And the most, I think, questionable thing is for him to recently use the SC statement of inconclusive findings as a method of clearing his name. So this, I would call political maneuvers by Azam himself, puts him or digs him deeper into the hole of suspicion by the public. So I think if he really wants to clear his name, let the investigation run its course, and also for the parliamentary select committees to investigate him and other parties that has the authority to investigate him to do their job instead of trying to influence it in one way or another. Right now, MAZC is being looked at as another political institution by the public because the way the personnel has been used to defend Azam and how Azam has been hiding behind processes and procedures to not be scrutinized for this saga.
Now, do you think we do enough to protect whistleblowers in this country?
I think there could be a lot more that we can do to protect whistleblowers. I think we have an act to protect them, but it is also specifically for those who come to authorities to expose any wrongdoing. But in an environment where trust deficit is high on our institutions, we need to be realistic. Mm-hmm. If we are going to report a corruption case against an MACC officer, do we then go to the MACC? So that's, I guess, basic logic. There's also a question: should MACC investigate MACC? If the top head of MACC is under question and being investigated for corruption, would then be appropriate for his subordinates to investigate him, or should he be arrested for a while go on sabbatical or on leave? While we form a special investigation body to investigate the allegations. So these processes should be detailed out and also be considered. I think the whistleblower protection measures should be expanded, not to just to those who expose wrongdoings via private channels, but also through public channels. Because as long as institutions is under suspicion, I don't think the public will voluntarily go and surrender information to these authorities, because they need the assurance that these complaints will be acted upon and their safety and their well-being and their security is being prioritized. They are protected once the report has been lodged.
Now, Iskandar, we talk about the problems that is, you know, when it comes to this, the corruption problems that are plaguing Malaysia right now. Because this, you know, we talk about how, you know, it hasn't been handled properly. Whether he's ultimately innocent or guilty, it's a different story altogether, because right now we are talking about lack of proper investigation, lack of check and balance, all sorts of things like that. And this is happening, you know, after the whole 1MDB scandal and you know, ongoing trials with regard to all of that. It's as if, you know, we haven't changed at all. It's as if the country hasn't really learned anything from past corruption scandals and all of this. How have we allowed this to happen as a nation? How have we reached this point?
Well, erosion of integrity and degradation of public trust, they don't happen overnight. Mm-hmm. But bit by bit, in a piecemeal manner over a series of damning events. The MACC... admittedly has vast powers under the country's anti-corruption law, but its reputation has been tarnished in recent years due to the perception that the agency didn't do much or didn't do enough during the 1MDB scandal, which took place in 2009 to 2018 under the ex-Prime Minister's Najib Razak's tenure. I mean, those who remember during 2015 to 2016, the perception was the institution failed us. because they themselves admit cleared the suspects at that time of 1MDB of the 1MDB allegation as everything's fine. There were no elements of corruption. I think the previous MACC chief actually went public to say this and was the frontline defender of Najib Razak during that case. So it's not simply a matter of one event triggering this whole crisis of confidence, but a series of, I guess, lapses in check and balances, especially the guardians of integrity, we would like to think, MACC being that, failing us to do that purpose, to serve that purpose. And we've seen that in a series of events, even through this Azam Baki saga, where even the anti-corruption agency board, ACAB, was used to clear Azam Baki's name. The chairperson, Abu Zahar Ujang, actually said that there was no wrongdoing on Azam Baki's behalf. And Azam Baki has allegedly came clean to him to say that that he has purchased and there was no wrongdoing being done over there.
Right.
And this was concluded over one meeting of the ACAB. And subsequently, we found out that the other members of ACAB distanced themselves from Abu Zahar because they find or deem this statement as unpopular. So we've seen from this reasons not to trust the institution. So I would say that the erosion didn't happen overnight. It happened through a series of unfortunate events.
So speaking of what needs to be done next, when we zoom in specifically on, let's say, the case involving Azam Baki, what's the next step now that, you know, the SE has come out and released their statement? And, you know, they pretty much say it's kind of inconclusive right now and all of that. So what needs to happen next? And thinking beyond Azam Baki, what do we need to change? What policies do we need to prevent these sorts of instances from happening again in the future?
So as I've mentioned earlier, the reports by SC and also the report by the ACAB on why they cleared Azam Baki should be made public. They should explain their stand and how they arrived to that stand. Meanwhile, the investigation by the PSC on the Prime Minister's agency regarding this case should be continued, and they should be given the power and resources to investigate and call on any civil servants to testify regarding the matter. And the best possible way is to make this public and broadcast the inquiry to everyone who is interested to be a spectator. It should be, I mean, we are living in a digital age. There is no excuse for not for holding it closed door. The issue has become a public issue. I believe every single member of the public deserves to hear and see what questions and answers and what transpires throughout this investigation. And the PSC should, through their investigation, it should come up with a report with relevant action steps that needs to be taken to overcome this problem or identify the issue, and also what should be put in place to prevent such incidents from occurring ever again. And if the Prime Minister declines this action step or dismiss this suggestion, then the Prime Minister himself should explain why he does so. So these are, I think, the immediate steps that needs to be taken. But ultimately, this proves why we need the MACC to be under an independent institution like the Parliament. For it to be under the Prime Minister, opens up more avenues for abuses and lapses in check and balance. So having placing the MACC under the parliament is crucial, and that should be our goal moving forward.
Perhaps you can explain that a little bit. Right now, the MACC is under the Prime Minister, as you said. Your suggestion is to move it under Parliament. What will change when it comes to actual, beyond just rhetoric? What exactly will that change? How will the power dynamics change if we make that shift from, you know, MACC being where it is now to being put under Parliament? What exactly does that mean?
So the finer details can be debated in the future, but mm-hmm. in principle, right now it's under the Prime Minister's agency or under the purview of the Prime Minister or supervision of the Prime Minister. And any appointment of the MACC chief would be on the advice of the Prime Minister. So this mm-hmm. leaves a lot of room for the Prime Minister to affect or influence the appointment of a personnel to the top level job. So in a sense, any chief of the MACC would be beholden to the sitting Prime Minister. So giving or rearranging or reforming this process, putting MACC under a parliamentary select committee, or maybe under Parliament itself, overcomes that lapse in procedures. So at least in a parliamentary select committee, you have both parties or multi-parties mm-hmm. Overseeing the body. So you have the opposition and also the government overseeing the whole matter. So you can't have a person's agenda controlling the anti-corruption body. So I think that is crucial. At least perception-wise, it restores trust in a damaged institution after years of, neglect and abuse. So this should be the first step. Any finer details to the arrangement can be debated further. I guess the conversation needs to start first. Mm-hmm. We haven't started this conversation, so this should be the first step.
Certainly. All right. Iskandar, before we wrap this conversation up, would you have a final message for us?
My final thought about this is this saga, this Azam Baki saga, has mm-hmm. shed light. And I think the people, the rakyat themselves, has seen why an institution as important as the MACC, which should uphold integrity, should be in itself independent and be put under another institution like the parliament instead of the executive. Because ultimately, the MACC is responsible to the rakyat and shouldn't hide behind the executives, the prime minister, or even procedural matters to free themselves from accountability. They uphold accountability, so they should be accountable themselves.
On that note, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you, Dashran.
That was Iskandar Farish. He's the comms director at REFSA, helping me make sense of the whole Azam Baki saga. Also, on a related note, there's going to be a youth-led street protest planned happening this Saturday by civil society organizations such as Secretary Solidarity Rakyat, Undi 18, Bersih Suaram, ABIM, and also political parties involved, Muda, Parti Muda, and also youth wings like Parti Socialist Malaysia Youth, DAP Youth, PKR Youth, Amana Youth, and many more. So the Tangkap Azam Baki protest is taking place this Saturday at 11 a.m. in front of SOGO KL. If you missed any part of our conversation today, you can check out the Live and Learn podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcast from. I'm Dashran Johan, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.